Evening, Tara Stewart's going to be here at 7. Next up, it's Game On, and we'll be back tomorrow at 3.
Live across the nation, this is RTE2FM.
It's 6 o'clock, I'm Jan O'Connell. People are being told to limit their contacts to help keep COVID infection rates down as the country moves out of level 5 restrictions tomorrow. 306 new COVID cases were confirmed this evening, and there are fears of a further spike as restrictions ease. The pre-Christmas rush is expected to get underway tomorrow as retailers welcome back customers to their premises. Many are extending opening hours, with some opening 24 hours to meet demand. Shoppers are being reminded to observe queuing protocols as they spend. Retail Ireland expects each household will spend €700 more than they would in an ordinary month during December. It says the spending will be bolstered by the additional €6 billion in household deposits that have been accumulated since this time last year. The National Transport Authority is appealing to the shopping public to avoid public transport at rush hour where possible over the coming weeks. Capacity will be increased to 50% tomorrow from the current 25%, but there is concern that there may still be pressure points during the morning and evening rush hour. A consultant in infectious diseases at the Mater Hospital says it makes sense to ask people to wear masks in outdoor settings where people are not socially distancing. Professor Jack Lambert said until the vaccine comes along, we need to continue COVID prevention measures, and masks are an important part of this. He says when staff at the Mater Hospital only wore masks when in a room with a COVID patient, there was a high level of cases. But when they began wearing masks in open areas as well, there were zero new cases.
We need to do everything we possibly can to avoid lockdown. And masks, hand washing, social distancing are all part of that solution. People should look at the science, not, you know, the most recent, self-appointed expert on Twitter. There's literature out there from well-respected scientists on the value of masks.
The British government has decided not to order a public inquiry into the murder of Belfast solicitor Pat Finucane. He was shot dead in 1989.
Weather with Liberty Insurance. Shopping for home insurance? Visit libertyinsurance.ie/home insurance to see why we're different.
Mostly cloudy overnight with some frost, lowest temperatures of 1 degree.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Thanks to the fantastic Jenny Green. Back with you tomorrow at 3. It's Monday, the 30th of November, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Dan Shanahan and Shane McGrath are standing by after another weekend of hurling heroics.
Jack Fagan onto it in the 45, gives the hand pass through to Stephen Bennett. Bennett now heading up to the 13-metre line, weaving his way through the black and amber cover, gets the shot away. A goal for Waterford, low and hard to the bottom right corner of the net, and that is just the start for the second half that Waterford needed.
Stephen Kelly is ready to talk Premier League after Edinson Cavani headed Manchester United to victory.
Can they create one last chance to win it? Rashford swings it and Cavani! It's a classic Manchester United comeback. Cavani has turned the game completely on its head, and the away day Kings have produced a remarkable comeback here.
Plus, the IRFU and the GAA have given us glimpses into 2021, and Ruby will review the weekend's racing.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM, and we'd love to hear your sporting highlights. Marie and Ruby, it was certainly a weekend of comebacks. Ruby, you would have been impressed with United, and Marie, Waterford for you, certainly was an incredible comeback.
Yeah, I didn't find, like, I don't have a major highlight, but I do have a lot of takeaways. I found it was a really enjoyable weekend of sport, but what I realised after watching a lot of it, I was working at the Camogie as well, is that we kind of take our sports people for granted a little bit. We kind of see them get injured, we wince, we move on to the next game, and then they have months and months of rehab to face. So on Saturday I was down at the Camogie, Cork's Gemma O'Connor started 2 weeks after puncturing her lung and she got a goal. Then I was listening to the football on the way back up in the car, and Nicole Owens, just back from a cruciate injury, scored a goal. Amy Mackin, another one just back from a cruciate injury, scored 2-4. On Sunday we had the hurling. Aaron Gillan was taken to hospital. We saw Joe Canning being stretchered off as well, a concussion. Then Sunday night, Raul Jimenez had that horrific head clash with David Luiz. The sound, I don't think I'll ever forget it. Oh, David Luiz was just put a bit of bandage on him and he continued. Then if you throw in the Formula One crash, Roman Grosjean, I think that was one of the scariest things I've ever seen, and he just hops out of it. So I just think after the weekend, just if you take into account everything and the sacrifices, and there's all of us sitting on the couch enjoying it, rubbing our hands, making our cup of tea, and they're putting in unbelievable work and giving us great entertainment, and I just think that they should be commended, because we didn't think we'd be here, and look what all of those people are doing for us weekend in, weekend out. They're getting us through the pandemic, and I think fair play to them. It's not as glamorous or as exciting for them as it is probably for us, as I'm sure both of you will definitely know.
It's a typical weekend for you, Ruby, bar their fireball crash.
Oh, I don't know about that, Dominic. I mean, you just had to watch David Russell on RT Racing yesterday. On he comes in a neck brace. Yeah. What is it, 5 weeks after breaking his neck? He's broke his C6 and C7 and dislocated C12. And, you know, he's saying how lucky he was that the vertebrae went outwards towards his skin and not inwards towards his spinal cord. And he's hoping to have a prognosis on the 17th of December. But look, and the way he spoke about it is often the way I spoke about it, or all sports people talk about it. Injuries are part of the game. You get them and you move on, and that's just it.
But Ruby, it's hard though, you know, like I know you get them and you move on, but you put in a lot of rehab, you put in a lot of work, like those goals that Amy Macken scored, that Nicole Owen scored, like they didn't happen by accident. They put in a serious amount of work and effort and practice to get back. I'm sure that Gemma O'Connor was probably feeling the effects of playing 2 weeks after a punctured lung on Sunday and you know, didn't get the win as well. So there's a serious amount of effort goes in so that you can do what you do, and I don't think us at home always appreciate that.
No, and all you ever think about is the physical pain of what's happened to you. But the physical pain of what's happened to you is gone a couple of hours. Painkillers, whatever it is, it's the mental pain of what you have to deal with then for the whole of the recovery. And people who aren't involved never quite understand what you're trying to say. And I don't even know if I'm making the right point or making it in the right way. But the physical pain of breaking your leg or your wrist or a slap in the back of the head is nothing compared to watching the sport move on without you. That's a way harder part. And the effort is all worth it to get away from that, to get back to what you want to do. It's you see it in Johnny Sexton coming off last week. I remember looking at Paul O'Connell, the last game he ever played, lying on the ground, and he's thumping the ground with his fist. That ain't the physical pain. That's the mental realisation of what's just happened. Mm. And that's a much bigger pain.
We used to have a bit of a rule in our dressing room that we wouldn't talk to injured players about their injuries. Because if you could imagine it, in a squad of, say, 30 to 40 players, and Ruby comes in with a broken collarbone or whatever it is, or an AC, he's just 40 times a day, yeah, I'm getting there, shoulders come along well, and he's just reaffirming a negative all the time, and you end up bringing those players down. So you'd have to make a massive effort with the injured players that you were still able to have a go off them and treat them as normal.
Actually, now that you mentioned that, Kilkenny, when they got through to the final, there's an injured player for them, Katie Power, and there's lovely pictures in the papers and online afterwards of all the players running over and celebrating with her and making her feel part of it as well, which I imagine it's really important, I'm sure, Donica.
Absolutely, and it's the good news that they said today, the GAA said that all the squads will, from here on in, be at the games. And I'll be honest with you, Marie, when we won in 2006, I'll never forget it. One of the best memories I have on the pitch is seeing the non-playing squad come out. Now, half of them were demented drunk and they were falling all around the place. But just knowing that they were the guys that got you to that point and that had prepared the team, and that, like we said, we probably lost out through injuries or different reasons, but they're the guys you want to be around. And, of course, to this point, it wasn't possible. But now into level three, it is good to see that the people that work hard will get rewarded and that have made so many sacrifices.
That is a very good point, yeah. And it is, we had so many managers coming out over the last week or so, and I know people were giving out about them as well and saying, sure, you're lucky to be able to go, but there is a huge amount that goes in, and all those players and backroom team members have soldiered through all those tough training sessions and put in the work and brought everyone along with them. So you have to say it is good for them.
Ruby, before I try to avoid the rugby for the rest of the night, have you got a highlight?
Oh, my highlight was Fairy House yesterday. And before I go there, Fulham have scored away to Leicester and they lead Leicester 1-0 in tonight's early Premier League game. Leicester, if they did win, could go to second in the Premier League table. But anyway, they're one down after 36 minutes. And my highlight most definitely was Fairy House yesterday. I thought Envoy Allen was exceptional in the Drinmore Novices chase. Honeysuckle did it well. Thought Rachel Blackmore gave her a brilliant ride. And Zana here was a new name on the horizon for the future.
What did you see there?
This is my highlight. Oh, what he did as a three-year-old, the time he clocked and the way he did it. Like he ran a lot faster than older horses did in the following novice hurdle and the following handicap hurdler. Three-year-olds are like underage players, don't they? They shouldn't be running faster than the older ones, but he did.
Okay. So that's where will they go next now?
He'll head for Cheltenham. Well, he won't. He'll go to Leopardstown at Christmas for the novice or the three-year-old hurdle on St. Stephen's Day. Probably go to the Dublin Racing Festival for the Grade One and onto the Triumph Hurdle at Cheltenham. But it was a hell of a good performance from Zana here. But look, racing's coming up at the end. We have to dissect it.
We'll move on with racing.
You know, David Nusafora came out today trying to I don't know what he was trying to do, but he was out today talking. What about the game, Bunica? I was in Bordeaux when you just about got by them in the Rugby World Cup. It didn't really remind me of that. Actually, do you know what the second half reminded me of? A Towns Cup game.
Oh, well, that's harsh. It was a really poor second half. Like you said, Ruby, I was there in 2007 where we won 14-10, so I can't really put a boot in. You'd like to say Georgia were good, but it was just a really poor second half from Ireland. And I think you can look at the positives. We have 10 new players and that we're developing a new leader. But I think for big games like that, we just really needed to put in a bit of a performance. And we didn't in the second half. And opportunities are sparse. And when you get them, you got to take them. And I think there's a few players that would have had an opportunity to impress Andy Farrell that didn't certainly do that in that second half.
So if you just park all that for a second, Donica, 8 games into his reign now, I don't think that anyone is any wiser about what the identity of the team is and how he wants them to play.
Yeah, and you could say that, Marie, and you'd be right, but there's fundamental basics that players have to look after. So set piece is one of them, winning a line-out. So we can't even see what Mike Catt has brought to our attack because we can't win a line-out. That's really harsh, but our line-out is under firing. It's not as where it needs to be at international level. So that's your best form of launch. So when you lose that and it's taken away, it's very hard to see what the attacking threats are. I think there has been a transition in the player. I worry a little bit, though. I actually think, and we have a few of the David Nusafora clips, but you know, when he's talking about younger players coming through, I think what we're actually seeing is a development within the provincial setup while the other players are away. And I think that will be the area of growth. But we definitely do need to bring more players on. I think Andy Farrell's done a really good job, but this weekend, I was disillusioned with rugby because I watched all the games. I watched New Zealand thump Argentina. I watched England versus Wales, France, Italy, and it was really, really poor. And I think we're in a negative spiral at the moment with rugby. And I think we need a little bit of help with a few rule changes or something because the game is stacked in a negative way to reward defence.
So who's stuck their hand up, Tonica, in the last couple of internationals that are going to be on Andy Farrell's team sheet going forward? He's tried loads of different players. Like, has Ross Byrne or Billy Burns stuck their hand up? Chris Farrell at 13. Who's put their hand up and said, I've made progress?
I don't think a whole lot. I'll be honest with you. You were hoping that there'd be someone clipping on the heels of Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton, but they're simply not there. Maybe you have to, and that's my point, maybe you have to go a layer below and look at the likes of Ryan Beard in the second row, Craig Casey, Ben Healy, these younger guys, because I just worry. Look, and it is a steep learning curve. I think anyone that would have seen with James Lowe, playing at international level is a step up. Two mistakes, it's a score. You can make that with your provinces any day of the week and someone will cover you, but in international level it's just so ruthless. But I don't think anyone has, I'll be completely honest with you. And I think if he's been a brilliant, exactly what you want as a coach, that he's backing you the whole time, but I think he's getting a clearer vision on who he can rely on.
When you look at the number of caps a lot of Irish players have got in relation to English or French or All Blacks, Has it always been an issue for Irish rugby going to that next layer below that you're just mentioning, going to the youngsters? Have we always relied on people for too long?
David Nusafour mentioned it today, the depth chart, the importance of developing players, bringing players on and to see who we have in it. And we're seeing it at the moment with Andrew Porter, that the talk is that he might have to go back over at Loosehead because we just don't have the depth behind Cian Healy. We saw Finlay Beelan playing Loosehead. We ended up with Dave Heffernan playing on the flank at the weekend, playing in the back row. I know he played there before, but he is a hooker. So I know COVID, it's COVID related as well, that you can't bring as many players into the squad, and you don't want to be harsh, and there is a negative spin around the place, but I think rugby's in a dangerous place at the moment. Rugby's not good to watch. I was coaching the under-7s. You'd always say to kids afterwards, make sure you go home and watch the international. I'd tell them go home and watch Peppa Pig or something else, because rugby at the weekend was really poor.
Tevin Usafora is the High Performance Director for the RFU, and he was holding a virtual media briefing and provided an update on a range of subjects relating to Irish rugby. But what came out of that, he kind of changed the narrative a little bit, Dunnock. I found that yesterday was really negative about the Irish performance, and he came out today and he's very much focused on the future and the issues facing rugby, and you know, talking about the Pro 14 and the issues with depth there, and he welcomed South Africa coming through as well. But it seems like he's deflected a little bit away from the issue in hand, and that is that there was a serious below par performance against Georgia.
I don't think he has, Marie. I think he came out and nearly stated the business side of it. Like, we have a clip there about him chatting about players' contracts, and the rule as a player was always, come autumn internationals, you want to have your contract locked down. And you know, today, like, it was Niall Woods was saying that there could be up to 90 players in the player pool at the moment that haven't signed contracts. Devin Nusafour has spoken about it and said the importance of being able to run it like a business and to show those players those contracts will be honoured. And this was what he had to say to Michael Corcoran earlier on.
No, I don't believe that's a risk at all at this point in time. I suppose what we needed to do was to do a really thorough feasibility of where the business is going to be come over the next 12, 18 months, 2 years. So that we could responsibly take a position on offering long-term contracts to the players. Obviously, when we're contracting 1, 2, 3 years out, sometimes building up those types of liabilities, we have to be sure on our ability to meet those commitments. And I suppose it's just about the business being responsible and making sure that we are in a position when we do enter into negotiations, you know, exactly where we stand, and that anything that we put on the table we'll be able to stand by with our players.
But just to the point Ruby was making, he also spoke about a reality check, and that's what we're probably on about, Ruby, the depth. Who is someone that's impressing? And this is what he had to say earlier on about the reality check inside of that.
I don't know with regards to how good people think we are. I think that with regards to where we need to be, you've always got to keep working on your player depth and where that's at. And that's why we've invested so heavily over the years in our player pathway. And you can see the number of players coming through. And whenever you get one or two positions, it would be very unusual to have everything covered 4 or 5 deep. So, you know, you've got to consistently work on this. It's something you can never take your eye off the ball. And, the moment we feel that we've got we've got some positions covered, you know, we'll start to get a little bit of vulnerability in other positions, and we've just got to keep working through that. You can never predict your injury predicament as well. Injuries after the COVID layoff across the board in rugby and in all contact sports are significantly higher than where they've been previously. I suppose that it's something that we keep working on. As I said earlier, the provinces have continued to utilise the pathway and academy players during this point in time, and giving those players as much opportunity as possible to play at the highest levels possible is what player development is all about.
Donika, you outlined a few of the positions there where Ireland are struggling. Is it good enough that they're struggling in those areas when you consider how much planning that David Nusafora would have put into getting to a situation where they have a setup where everything should be covered, but it isn't?
Yeah, it is tough though, Marie. We have four provinces. The depth of the talent is really difficult. I know that might seem like an excuse, but it's very hard to find 120 to 130 kg tight head prop. You know, they just don't, you know, stroll around the place. And then, like, if we look at the, you know, the hurling at the weekend, it just, the talented players are as well playing other sports, whereas in New Zealand they all play rugby, you know. So I'm not trying to make excuses, but you're right, you try to have a line of succession, and maybe they're you know, maybe there's a few gaps in it, but I think he's right. There has been an awful lot of injuries at the moment. I actually think Andy Farrell's doing a brilliant job of growing our squad. I think he's the first coach we've had, and maybe the Autumn Internationals not involving ranking points has helped him, but he's the first person that has blooded within a kind of calendar year and not waited for a summer tour to give guys a few token caps. And I think, you know, he's doing a good job. But like I said, my greatest concern, I'll be honest with you, watching all the rugby at the weekend, is how negative it is. It really is really poor to watch.
So what do you suggest?
There you go. How do you solve the problem? I think that I'm a front five forward. I love scrums, but I think we need help on them. And I'd stop the clock because I know exactly what front row do. You're playing against the clock there, and it's just chew up the clock here and use up the time as much as you can. I'd stop giving free kicks at scrum time, because all that leads to is slowing the game down again. So it's either a penalty or something else. What else? People joining the ruck after it's set. This, you know, when a nine gets to the ruck, then they're starting to put people in this in a ruck, and we're getting these big long rucks. I think as soon as the ball's available, it needs to be played. I know this is, and we're going to be chatting about it when we come to soccer, but player welfare. But I just think with the amount of subs, I don't think we're seeing any fatigue level in the game. I think you've 100, like we mentioned, Marie, 130 kg forwards playing 55 minutes with a 15 minute break in it, and there's just they're power athletes that just don't fatigue, and they're just playing to a certain point. If they were on the pitch for longer, I think they would, you know, they'd fatigue more, and there'd be more space around them, and they'd make more errors. I think the rugby league rule about the 40-20 would be brilliant. It would make people keep players in the backfield. Otherwise, you have to lose players off the pitch or play in a bigger pitch. But one simple fix this weekend: just make people be a yard back on the hindmost foot. And believe me, I did it as well. What you do is in around the ruck, you stay as hindmost foot, but then from that on, you from maybe four out defender, you start taking the front foot. So you're like a banana, if you know what I mean, to kind of forcing them back in.
Is that not just up to the referee to enforce the offside rule?
Yeah, it is. But I actually think
that's
comes
on for years.
What we're calling, you have to call it assistant referees now. There used to be touch judges, but they could do with taking the stick out and having a look at it.
Just enforce the offside rule.
There you go.
We're going to take a break, but Fulham are leading Leicester 2-0 now at half time.
Are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
At Toyota, we set our sights on creating a car that looks good, feels good, but does even more good. One that feels even more exciting, even more energetic, even more electric, without ever needing to be plugged in. Challenge accepted. The all-new self-charging hybrid electric Yaris. Contact your dealer today about flexible payment options and see just how affordable the new Yaris is. Toyota. Built for a better world.
This Christmas on Disney Plus, stream the biggest new releases plus all your festive favourites.
Wow!
With Pixar's exclusive new critically acclaimed movie, Soul.
Today started out as the best day of my life.
The hilarious new comedy, Noel, starring Anna Kendrick.
We gotta find Santa.
And the unmissable Christmas mischief of Home Alone. Make this Christmas wonderful with Disney Plus. All these and more streaming this Christmas. 18 plus subscription required. T's and C's apply.
Don't just say Happy Christmas, say Go Anywhere.
IrelandHotels.com's Go Anywhere gift cards give you access to over 350 hotels and guest houses across Ireland. Can you think of a better gift to a loved one, client or colleague than that of great memories and experiences? For instant delivery or by post in a signature gift box, visit IrelandHotels.com.
Grammy, Brit, Golden Globe and Oscar-winning Sam Smith returns with their superb new album, Love Goes. Featuring the hit singles, Dancing with a Stranger and Diamonds. Available to call and collect from your local Golden Disc store or 24/7 on goldendiscs.ie.
Whatever you watch, if you have a TV, you must have a TV licence. It's the law. That's just one of the terms and conditions of life in Ireland. So get yours at tvlicense.ie or at any post office. This message is brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Game on 2FM.
You go Waterford again now up to the edge of the D. Now coming onto it is the Lions there for Waterford. Now they're close to the goal. The ball has been fired into the net. That is just the goal that Waterford needed in this All-Ireland semi-final. And the goal has arrived in this game for the man from Dungarvan, Dara Lyons. And now Kilkenny are in serious bother. And Waterford have notions of making the All-Ireland final. Well, they've a great chance now.
Notions of making the All-Ireland final. I have to say that is a great phrase from Pádraig Lodge. And indeed, they are in the All-Ireland final. They gave us an absolute treat on Saturday, beating Kilkenny in a very dramatic affair. Limerick and Galway was a bit more routine on Sunday, but a very deserving victory for John Kiely's men. I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Waterford's Dan Shanahan and Tips Shane McGrath. But first, let's take a listen to Dan's rallying cry ahead of Saturday's game.
What I give to be in Croke Park tomorrow would be unbelievable. The years don't be long gone, especially when you get to a certain age. The passion, the pride we had in our jerseys, going out there, running with my teammates, was phenomenal. What I give to be running back out there again tomorrow in our Ireland semi-final. Please take the chance, lads, because they don't come around very often. Best wishes.
Well, Dan, they definitely took that chance. It must have been pretty amazing to see Waterford do to Kilkenny what Kilkenny have done to so many teams over the year. Absolutely heroic displays.
Unbelievable, Marie. But Kilkenny have done it over the years to Waterford themselves. So they have, like, you know, in previous years, but the second half performance from Waterford last Saturday was unbelievable. Sitting at home watching it, wishing I was up there watching it, but again, these things happen, but just what a performance, second half.
The transformation of this team, Dan, it's been so significant. We know Liam Cahill is the new manager, but what do you think is the big difference in this team on the field?
Yeah, it's a good question. I just think it's amazing when an outside manager comes in there, the stuff he can do and lay down the law. And I think the lads are bought into it big time. I think the lads, every 30 lads that are up there training every 2 or 3 nights a week have bought into Liam and his management. And you see the rewards. They're fighting for every ball, and that's coming from the manager. When he goes in, he makes a statement, he does this and does that. But again, you have to give Liam and the management credit. The way the lads are working, their fitness levels have been phenomenal. They could have kept going again last hard evening. But I have to say the fitness levels, I couldn't get over. Like, they were saying 3 weeks in a row, it didn't bother them last weekend. I think Dan, that this really goes to show what fitness levels can do.
Dan, as a fan, what were you thinking at half time?
Yeah, I was a bit worried, I'll be honest with you. But I just felt and believed if they could get an early goal in the second half that they had a chance. They had to get goals to beat Kilkenny, but I just felt that at half time they could. A lot of people would be saying they're gone, they're finished, and Kilkenny take him apart in the second half, but it didn't work that way. Stephen Bennett took the ball on, took the responsibility and scored a massive goal, and from there on I couldn't see Waterford being beaten. Kilkenny had one decent forward in the second half, and that was TJ Reid. He was remarkable. He was the only man that stood up there in the second half, like, you know, and Waterford momentum carried it and carried it and carried it when Darragh Lyons got the second goal, and they could have got a third one. Once the first goal went in for me, I thought there was only one winner.
Shane, we've been talking so much about the likes of Tony Kelly, about the likes of TJ Reid, but Stephen Bennett is definitely getting a lot of plaudits and so well deserved as well.
Yeah, definitely, Marie.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Oh, sorry.
Go on, Shane.
Sorry, Dan.
You'll be
raving about him for the next few weeks down there. No, look, he's been unbelievable. He's definitely entered the equation, Marie, for Hurler of the Year. Another exhibition the other day. I mean, he scored like I think maybe the points he got lost in the whole excitement of the game and the second half performance by, which was, and I'm sure Dan will agree, probably the best second half performance by a Watford team ever. Maybe a best second half performance by any team in a semi-final ever. But Stephen Bennett was just exceptional, and the way he stood up with his freeze. I mean, but the point he got, if you go to the first half, there's 32 minutes gone, picks up the ball inside the 45. Something similar, like Kevin Broderick almost did it years ago against Kilkenny, but he ended up flicking it over. I think Pat Ryan's head was a centre-back for Kilkenny at the time, but Bennett just ran the whole way, and it just shows his fitness and the confidence he has in himself. Just ran the whole way, knew he couldn't catch it again, went another 20 yards around a couple of Kilkenny guys and over the bar, and like all these things just gave Watford confidence. And what I have to admire most about the Stephen Bennetts, about Ozzy Leeson's, about the Tadhg the Burkas, the Jamie Barnes, all these players, the Jack Fagans, like they were like at one stage 8-9 points down, and with like in previous years maybe you start feeling, the legs start feeling a bit more, and you get mentally, you get a bit tired because you know you're out for 3 weeks in a row, but this didn't faze the Watford lads at all, and they just stuck to the system, stuck to the process, they believed in the system. I think that's a massive thing. And they just kept plugging away. Their fitness was unbelievable. But I think the mental strength they showed to make the comeback, Marie, was really impressed me most about them. And it was a phenomenal second half performance. I mean, we talk about the third quarter being the championship quarter. It really, really is now. It really has shown to be. And what Watford did to Kilkenny in that, they scored, they had 15 shots and 12 scores. They scored 111 compared to Kilkenny scored 4 points, and that's just set them up, you know. But, you know, individually, Bennett was exceptional. As a team and as a panel, I think Waterford are in a really, really good place.
Shane, obviously Waterford won and they deserve all the credit, but this isn't the first time this year we've seen Kilkenny have a big lead at half-time and switch off a little bit in the second half. Did they do what they did against Dublin, or were Waterford just that good?
I think Watford were that good the way they took the game to them, Ruby. I just think, you know, after half time, as I said, in that 15 minutes, like they scored 111, Kilkenny scored 4 points, and they just drove on. They drove on. The confidence they were getting from each other. But look, for me, and someone said it as well, Watford did to Kilkenny what Kilkenny had been doing to teams for years, in that their aerial ability. All right, and and I suppose one guy in particular comes to mind, Jack Fagan. Like he's a meat man. He was hurling unbelievable stuff in Carlow IT, and you know, and the Watford lads, rightly so, they got him down there, and like his two catches led to the two Watford goals. But the aerial ability. But even if I go back to Watford's ability to win Kilkenny's puckouts, like Watford won 11 of Kilkenny's puckouts. You just don't hear that happening. Like Kilkenny are the masters of winning primary possession in the air, and Watford dominated them on Saturday night in the air, won 11 of their puckouts. And I just feel, look, I sent out a tweet about TJ, and it ended up getting a few more likes than what I thought it would or whatever, like, but 114 he scored, but his hooks, blocks, his turnovers, he won 3 to freeze himself that he scored, his catching balls, like TJ contributed in my calculation 118 to the 223 Kilkenny scored. So like I just don't know where they'd be without him at the moment. And another thing from watching him as well, their forward line as a unit, they just don't seem to have the same pace or the same energy as what Watford had. Like, and you know, I just think, while I don't think they'll be gone away for too long by any means, they will probably have to have a look and say, look, we can't keep depending on TJ. Like, I think TJ is 32-33 now, and like are they a one-man team? Okay, they're not a one-man team on paper, but if you go by scores, like TJ has scored 343 out of 763 from this year. So that means he scored over 50% of the stuff they're getting on their own. So, but I just don't think we can take away from Watford's performance. I think it was brilliant, and they just dominated Kilkenny. Like,
and even Dan, when you think of the Kilkenny bench, you know, if you're out there playing and you see Fenley or Wally Walsh coming off, you think that they're going to be game changers. But it was actually the Waterford bench that had the better impact.
Yeah, I think so, Marie. Definitely. Shane mentioned something about pace, you know, and Watford have that in abundance. Co Park is a massive field, so they have Liam left the shackles off, and they went out in the second half and just with everywhere. With one of our wing backs, Leo Daly, came on and got a massive score from wing back. He ended up corner forward, you know, and Caleb Ryan's got 2 points from wing back. Shane Nutley got a point from cornerback. The scores coming from everywhere in the backs from Waterford. Tight work again. It's been unbelievable the way they just cut loose in the second half. And you know, they have to get goals. For me, Watford have to get goals to win games, and they got two two great goals against Kilkenny. He got three against Clare, like, you know, and they could have got one or two more, but they're creating the chances. They had two chances against Limerick, and it must have found they didn't take. They'll have to take them the next day to have any chance of beating Limerick. But they're just the hungerness, the freshness, the speed they have. You have to be impressed with Waterford. And I have to acknowledge that Shane said there with DJ Reid. He's been phenomenal. The boys didn't do much when they came on. Walter Welch or Finley didn't contribute that. And I wouldn't have taken off Richie Hogan either if I'd been honest with Marie. He's a game changer. You know, so look, I was delighted to see Richie come off the field because he's able to get a goal.
Shane, just on the 12 different scorers, you mentioned the fitness, winning the air, but Liam Cahill, he's ruthless as well, and we saw it before, just after the first water break with Jake Dillon being taken off.
Yeah, I took literally 15 minutes, but I think Jake and like Dan'll know him better personally. He looked really nervous, really tetchy on the ball there in the first quarter. He had a couple of chances of rises. He misrose it. He even got a ball in his hand and it fell out. And like we've all been in those positions. It's a high game, high pressure game, high intensity game. Okay, you've no crowd, but it's still high pressure. And he just looked that he wasn't himself. As maybe Dan might jump in on this because I don't know him as a person, but he looked kind of tetchy. But Cahill is ruthless. He's been ruthless down through the years with tip teams. He's called out parents of minors here in tip before, saying that they all think they're geese or swans, basically, is what he said. So look, he has his way, but you know, for me, Jake looked a little bit nervous, but Liam, he said, look, this isn't happening for him today. And like what Waterford have developed over the year is a massive panel. Like Dan mentioned, Earl Daly there coming on scoring a point. Like Earl Daly didn't feature in the Munster final. Like he didn't come on or anything. Conor Gleeson is another guy who's come on the last two games. He didn't even come on in the Munster final. So there's two guys now who have done it at the height of pressure in Croke Park, and Liam Cahill can go, now I have two more guys that I can throw into the fray that I didn't use against Limerick. But yes, I agree totally with you, Dunica. He's ruthless. But you know what? He looks around now, and I'm sure Dan will agree, he looks around now and he sees 5, 6, 7 guys that he can trust. And I think that's what you need in any sport, is when the stakes are highest, can you turn around to your subs bench, look at them? Because we've all been involved in teams, lads, where the manager might turn around and he'll go, enough, and I'm definitely not bringing any of them lads on today, we just have to stick with what we have. Like, but now he turns around and he goes, I can actually bring on any 5, 6, 7 of these guys because he trusts that they'll do it. Like,
John Coyley's Limerick got the job done. It wasn't a classic, as I said at the start, but look, semi-finals are there for winning. Dan, do you think you would have learned a lot from that performance, just letting Galway back into the game and stay in the game as well, and the way they dealt with the sweeper?
Yeah, it's a tough game because we all knew it was going to be a physical battle really going into the game, like, you know, and for me it was an unbelievable hit. So it was the great scores. What gear are they making? That's the question I'm asking. Like, you know, that they're in third or fourth gear, they look to be casual. Next minute they switch off and Galway come back into it. Same in the Munster final. They switched off and Waterford came to 18 points, but yet they push on and win the games. You know, so to worry for me, Limerick aren't creating many goal chances. So they're not taking their scores from out the field. I think Galan must be going mad a few times yesterday with the ball being left in low one-on-one in front of him, and there was going, the ball was going wide at the other end. But again, no, they've got the job done. You said it, Marie, semi-finals are about winning, and they won it. Like, no, that's that job done for them. Like, they can fully 2 weeks to focus on Waterford and where to try and exploit Waterford and the speed and how to stop Waterford making them runs.
Yeah, I'd imagine next time around it's going to be quite a different game. But that slow start, Shane, like, it was worrying enough from them.
Yeah, it was, but I think they learned so much from the way it didn't work from last year in the semi-final, Marie, like against Kilkenny. Kilkenny blew them away in that period last year. Now, there was no water breaks last year. You know what I mean? Maybe if there was a water break last year, Paul Kinnear could have got them in and kind of reviewed, say, lads, we need to just calm the thing down. But there was none. And, you know, they were 9 points down before they knew it against Kilkenny in the semi-final last year. Whereas this year, you know, okay, Galway did, they absolutely did make the better start, and you know, 7 points to three up after the first quarter, or 7 points to four up, sorry, after the first quarter. But you know what, Limerick had six wides in that period, so it wasn't as if Limerick weren't getting on the ball. They just weren't taking the right option. And you know, 9 minutes in, their man of the match, Tom Morrissey, pops up with a point and just kind of settles the whole thing down. So like, I just think that they've so much experience now. I mean, yesterday, like, while the scoreline suggested there was 3 points in it, like, for me, like, Limerick are, they were the better team all the time. And, like, Galway were always going to find it very hard to win that match yesterday, Marie. They only scored 10 points from play. Limerick scored 21 points from play. So they scored 21 points from play. They didn't get a goal and all this. Like, will they have to get a goal to win the final? They mightn't, like. But will Waterford have to get a goal or two to win the final? They probably will, in my opinion. But, like, John Kiely now has his stick to beat him with, because 16 wides, like. You know, this is something that they need to work on. And another thing for me with Limerick is that you know, they're kind of they're indisciplined, that they're showing, in that they conceded 12 frees yesterday against Galway. You know what I mean? 12 scoreable ones. And Galway scored 10 of them. And if I'd be right in saying Stephen Bennett scored 10 points from frees in the Munster final. So there's another stick that John Kiely is going to beat him with, say, lads, we have to stop giving away these frees. What I found fascinating as well was the difference in the two number 10s, the way they took their sidelines. Joe Canning scores four sidelines. Garrod Hegarty is the number 10 for Limerick. But he has no interest in scoring a sideline. If you watch it back, he just drops the ball down the ground. He could nearly put it in the ground, like stamp it into the ground. And he's just looking to give a 10-15 yard pass. So I just found that very interesting, in the way Galway were approaching their sidelines and the way Limerick were approaching their sidelines, like yesterday. So
Dan, obviously, or not obviously, but poor Joe Fanning was carried off after getting a fair bang to the head. But those sidelines, as Shane was referencing, like, what is the skill involved in doing what he was doing? It just looks incredible to watch from a non-hurling person, how you can do it almost like it's a golf club and a golf ball, the way he's hitting them.
It's just a gift, a ruby, to be honest with you. I put it this, I never took a ruby, so I never got the opportunity. But I tell you, he just hit four line balls over the barrack. He did. Was unreal. And Fintan Burke came on and did it further out when Joe went off the field. Do you know, I thought Joe was a big loss going off the field. So he was, as was Carl Magna for Galway. You know, but just a gift, the way Joe Kenny seems to, that's why I say they're leaving their trust in the ability to Joe come across from number 12 side to cut the ball over the bar from that side of the field. You know, it's probably worth 2 points in the game, let's be honest about it. It's just a skill that Joe has and other people have. Austin Beasley do that. I do agree with Shane. Just Gerard Hegarty, he just puts the ball down and goes short every time. I just can't believe some of the teams haven't been copped onto that. He did the Munster final as well a number of times.
And we saw Rebecca Henley as well doing it for Galway in the quarterfinals. Dan, just to move on to Camogie for a second, I was down in Cork at the weekend and saw the semi-finals, but a lot of the aftermath has been about the women's teams having to crowdfund to cover their expenses for the final, and then the gaps in funding between the men's and women's GA. And just as well today, there was another bit of news that yourself and Fergal O'Brien and Pauline Casey have left your role in charge of the Waterford Senior Camogie team. What brought upon this decision?
I thought it was the right decision. We thought as a manager it was the right decision. Really, to be honest with you, we gave it everything we had. The ladies gave us everything they had. But as you said there, the fundraising that the Camogie Association have to do, especially the Kilkenny, but yeah, I saw it in our own county here, the fundraising we try to do, we have to do compared to what the lads get, is if they put in a massive effort, the ladies, to do what they do, but they never get the recognition. And I feel for the girls, I feel for the Waterford girls, because I was involved with them this year, and it was an honour to be involved with them. They gave us management everything they could. We came up short against Tip 2 or 3 weeks ago. But again, to go out and try and raise your money this time, every place has been hit with COVID. But I just don't think the recognition that the girls, the performances, the two semi-finals the weekend, and the conditions, the skill levels, the training they do to play the game is unbelievable. They just don't get recognised.
I think anyone that goes from, especially being in the men's game, into the women's game, my own dad did it actually for a while. He was involved, and he was just so surprised at the lack of, facilities and the lack of supports that the women get. And it isn't talked about often enough, but it is becoming a lot more of a focal point, and that's really good to see. And I think when the likes of yourself, Dan, raise it, people do stand up and listen, and hopefully it'll be something that we do keep talking about again. But it'll be Wednesday, I think, before we'll be talking about the Camogie again. We'll have Aoife Murray on to look back at the weekend, but for now it is definitely, I think, Waterford's day, Waterford's moment, and Waterford's maybe for the taking. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, it's what an opportunity for the lads. You know, it's stuff we dream of down here, to be honest with you, Marie, to run out in 2 weeks' time in December for an All-Ireland final. You know, they have a grand recovery week now to get it right for the Limerick. Go away, study Limerick, see who can bring their A game to the All-Ireland final. To be intriguing. Liam Cahill has done it as a manager with Tipperary, as a player himself, as a manager under 20s and my minors. So he knows how to win All-Ireland. So he does, which is a benefit to the lads for Sunday week. But again, Limerick are an awesome team. They have won Munster, they have won the league. So they have, and to really capture here to win Sunday week, to win three trophies in 2 or 3 months' space would be unbelievable for that team. But I do give Waterford a great chance on Sunday week.
And Shane, it's a Tipperary man. I'm sure you're delighted to see Kilkenny beaten, but of your two neighbours, who do you think will win the final?
Yeah, I think it'll be fascinating. I think actually the sideline battle will be fascinating. Not John Kiely and Liam Cahill, you know, they'd be two similar characters, you know, they're fantastic men managers. But actually I'm looking at the coaches in Mikey Beavins and Kinnork. Beavins has done it at minor under 20, under 21 level, won All-Ireland's. Paul Kinnork has done it at minor under 21 and he's done it twice as senior. So I think you have two coaches there who, in my opinion, in the modern game, are two of the best tactically. So I just think you're going to have a tactical battle. It's going to be absolutely unbelievable. I think Waterford will learn a lot from the Munster final. I think Limerick will too. And I think Limerick will feel, as Dan said, semi-finals are for winning. And I think that's what Limerick did yesterday. I think they won the semi-final. And I think there's another couple of gears in them. And I just feel that there's probably a massive performance coming in them that we haven't seen yet. Like they've won all their matches. They've bet Tip, bet Waterford. They won yesterday against Galway, and they probably haven't played to their potential, and is it coming in the final? And here's an outside one for you. Graham Mulcahy didn't score yesterday after 39 minutes, got taken off. Maybe if he gets a jersey for the final, he might be man of the match. He'll have a lot to feel he has a lot to prove. So look, with all these things added up, I just feel it is going to be Limerick's year, and they will win the final.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to spending the next 2 weeks talking about it, Dan and Shane. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break, and then it's soccer.
Game on UFF with Green Fern. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Fern's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Panadol presents Homegrown Heroes. When communities come together, ordinary people can do extraordinary things. Meet Fergus Lennon, a volunteer with Blood Bike Leinster.
We started Blood Bike Leinster back in 2013. We transport blood and blood products and medical items between different hospitals.
The active ingredients in Panadol Extra Soluble relieve 5 types of tough pain to help you meet pain with strength and keep doing what matters most. Panadol Extra 500mg, 65mg soluble effervescent tablets contains paracetamol. Always read the label leaflet.
At Irish Life Health, our benefit plan helps you embrace a healthier lifestyle. Get up to €250 back on a mix of benefits, like fitness wearables, dietitians, and sports clubs, like your local GAA club. It's health insurance, but not as you know it. Search Irish Life Health.
Irish Life Health VAC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Terms and conditions apply. Call us to see exactly what's covered.
Our health service is here for you this winter, and we're taking every step to protect you from COVID-19. Our services are open and working, from routine appointments to urgent care. Remember to check your prescriptions and keep a list of your medicines handy. And look out for your Keeping Well This Winter booklet in the post. Visit hse.ie or call HSE Live on 1850 24 1850 for more information. From the HSE.
That every child deserves to feel safe.
And that's even more important this year.
There's a thousand miles between you and I.
In a year where we've had to keep our distance and put our lives on hold,
the one thing that we cannot put on hold is our support for the ISPCC.
We're going to do what we can to help,
but we need your help too.
The world will get back to normal.
We'll dance again. Gigs, festivals, epic nights. We'll all come back.
And when they do,
we'll have the biggest prize of the year ready for you.
You won the 2FM Golden Ticket!
The Golden Ticket in aid of the ISPCC is back.
For your chance to win free tickets to every gig in Three Arena
and every major festival for a year when it all kicks off again.
Text 2FM Ball to 50300. Text costs €4. Oh, receive a minimum of €3.60.
Service provider is Light Charity.
For full details, check out 2fm.ie.
The Golden Ticket in aid of the ISPCC.
Keep it here all week for your chance to win.
2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now it is time to talk Premier League. There was a lot of drama over the weekend. There was a VAR controversy as Brighton hosted Liverpool. There was a last gasp comeback victory for Manchester United. Manchester City got back to their free scoring best. Mikel Arteta is very concerned after seeing his side suffer another home defeat. But all of that aside, I think that we need to start with the shocking clash of heads, which led to Raul Jimenez fracturing his skull and David Luiz strapping his head and continuing on for a while. Following that, Troy Deeney came out and said that players should be trusted to know if they can play on after a clash of heads. Then Headway came out and expressed anger and disappointment at football's continued failings to protect its players from concussion. Stephen Kelly, a former Premier League footballer, joins us now. Stephen, how big an issue do you think concussion is in football?
I think it's huge, and I think the point being made that it should be left to the players is crazy. You can't leave it to players. You absolutely can't, because anybody that plays high-level sport and will know that you will always want to continue on. As rarely, Donica, Ruby, yourself, you all know that if you get banged, think, oh, I can continue. I've played a game where I still don't remember to this day, and I had no clue I was concussed and woke up in hospital the next morning with a broken hand and a broken nose and didn't realise that has happened. So, you know, it can't be left to the players. They have to be assessed. They have to be checked. Measures have to be in place to make sure they're okay, and you have to make sure that that player can continue on. If they can't continue, you take them off, because there's big, big repercussions if they were to get, you know, if this was continuing on.
I've gotten into the back of the ambulance. You say continued. I've gotten into the back of the ambulances knowing I was concussed and lied my way past the doctor to ride in the next race. Yeah. So trust in sports people to continue. They're just going to continue full stop, because that's what they want to do. And I knew the risks and I knew what I was doing. I had been concussed, but I wanted to do it. So I made that choice myself. So why should adults have that decision taken away from them?
Well, I don't think it should be, because even though you're in your situation, you're an individual person and you will have people responsible for you, but if they let you go and something was to clearly happen to you, I know you're taking responsibility, but for instance, if a boxer's fighting and the person doesn't throw in the towel and they die in the ring, it's the person that didn't throw in the towel. The guy in the ring might want to stay on and continue on the fight, but the person that throws in the towel, it's his conscience and it's his feeling that I didn't stop this fight, it's going to be an issue. I think we're all guilty of wanting to continue. We're professional, we want to play. Your love is sports. You want to continue on. You never want to stop. But that sometimes that blinds your vision of how important and how risky what you're doing is.
And as well, Stephen, there's a lot of people watching as well, you know, and seeing that behaviour. You know, we're talking about educating players and educating people and, you know, people that might not have the luxury of having doctors around to assess them and seeing players playing on, thinking that that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, you know, Ruby, you're completely right. You continue on there. That's your decision. But if you can't make that decision, if you have someone that says to you, no, you're not doing, you're not going, absolutely no way, I'm not letting this happen, then as much as you feel like you want to continue, if it's taken out of your hands, you can't feel guilty for the fact that you couldn't go. It was out of your hands. You weren't allowed to continue. So the risk factor, it comes down, and I think that's the way it has to be. You know, I'm of the opinion I'd play on. I always would. Have never stopped the game. Like I said, I woke up in hospital the next day not having a clue where I was. They were calling me Dory from Not Finding Nemo, because I kept repeating the same things over and over again. And that was just probably me wanting to play, but that's the wrong thing to do.
I think that's a cheap shot of sports people, Marie. Say they're setting a bad example, wanting to continue with concussion. What about people diving and cheating? What sort of example are they setting?
Well, you see, potentially you won't get seriously injured from diving or cheating.
No,
you look like a bad
person.
But I think when it comes to something as serious as potentially a brain injury or a head injury, that you should try and lead by example when it comes to that. So many times, I think, particularly in rugby, Donica, we've seen it. We've seen the arguments. We've seen players. Some of them come to mind now. I'm not going to name them. And we've seen them trying to argue and stay on. And then they're nearly falling over.
Yeah, there's the incredible image of Dr. Aina Falvey, actually pulling Sean O'Brien. And Stephen, I agree that there's quick fixes, isn't there? Like, you could easily in soccer have a concussion sub while someone goes away and does a concussion test, and that would, you know, we see that in NFL, we see it in rugby, we see it in cricket. It takes 10 minutes and then it just assesses that player if they're fit to continue. And like Ruby's saying, it's just then it becomes a choice between management and medics. But David Luiz are there just looking on at him playing with a bandage with blood coming from his head was ridiculous in modern sport.
it's crazy. You do feel, and as much as, like I said, I don't want to take away people's desire to want to play and continue on, and there's nothing more admirable than somebody being hurt and wanting to play through. I love that. That's why I picture being sport, and like you say, he's an absolute trooper and a Trojan. But if this was the result in some person actually passing away because they continue on, where the decision can be made to take them out, and it's not their decision, I think that's much more important, that they, like you said, you take them off for a few minutes, assess them, see if they're close, that they can continue on, and you know the decision is out of your hands, because that's the only way for it to be acceptable for an athlete, I think, is if I'm not making a decision, because I will always choose to continue on. Like yourself, all of you guys would want to continue, but with that out of our hands, then you feel a bit better about it.
Yeah, it is. I think it was worrying scenes, and everyone will have examples of terrible things happening, and it's just good to see the right thing being done. We don't see it often enough, but sometimes when these things are highlighted, or like the David Luiz, when that is spoken about, and also I think Troy Deeney's comments, and you know, he's been criticised widely, and I think that's right as well, and that needs to be done. But let's move on to the football, because there was plenty of it, and Ruby is gloating away here. He's only dying to say the words Edison Cavani.
Two glorious headers, Stephen, weren't they?
Yeah, oh, brilliant. And Marie and I were so discussing why he wasn't starting and why he was going to become in the starting lineup for the last week or so, and we're kind of wanting to see this guy feature, because you know he's got such good pedigree scoring in Europe, and you expect it to happen at some point. But the goals he scored were excellent. They were just great movement. The second one particularly, he just darts across the player and just flicks into the bottom corner, giving McCarthy no chance. And McCarthy was on fire in the game as well with a shot stopping. So, you know, two great goals from him.
Jurgen Klopp was on the rampage as well. He's not just not happy to 12 o'clock kickoff, is he?
No, to say the least, I think he's aggrieved by what's happened. You know, his squad has been decimated through injury, and you can see it's bubbling over, and it's starting to show in his frustration that, you know, he can't pick the players he wants, he can't rest them when he wants to want them, and then obviously going on a bit wilder and decisions made with the five swords. With, you know, there's an argument for both, because a lower team that has less of a squad, they don't have the glorious chance of throwing on a world beater, you know, with the last few minutes of the game. Whereas Liverpool, when they have a full strength squad, they have the, you know, they're good enough to be able to have enough players on the bench to change a game last few minutes. So it's an argument for both sides. But yeah, he was definitely a bit flappable the weekend.
How difficult is it for him to play his system that he wants to play, the game that we've got used to, the excitement, the exciting football that they play, just when you think about the amount of injuries they had, but also just the different combinations, 11 different pairings at centre back, we're seeing full backs changing all the time, rotating cast in midfield, but he's still getting there with that style.
Yeah, I think I touched on this last week, saying that the blueprint Liverpool have for the way they play, I think allows their players to understand it more readily. For instance, if you compare them to Manchester City, it's such tippy-tappy football, in and around the box, all intricate, and everybody that has the ball has to be extremely comfortable in and around small areas, tight spaces, pass the ball. The way Liverpool play, they can be very direct at times. So if you have pace on the wings and players that are capable of finding a long-range pass or hitting a diagonal, as well with that intricate play and defensive rigidity that they normally have, I think players can fit into a style that Liverpool play easier than what they would do with a Man City style.
Wolves were good enough winners over Arsenal, but Roy Keane was good and critical afterwards, said the Arsenal players weren't good enough, they were soft, lacking confidence. Was he over the top, or was he hitting the nail on the head?
I think, yeah, he probably hit the nail on the head, and Arsenal have been guilty of this since the days of they had the likes of Vieira, which I'm sure Roy would have clashed heads with over enough of times that, when, since they had those physical teams, Arsenal have always kind of been thought of being a bit of a soft touch, bearing down to physicality, not being able to put up a fight. And, you know, they look like they were getting away from that, but the last few games they've not been great, and they've just not showed the real quality that they have done when the Atleta force came in.
Stephen Kelly, thanks a million for your roundup of the concussion in the Premier League that Marie is so worried about. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
That's all we have time for, lads. We'll be back tomorrow. Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high-protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Dee's retirement will be spent sipping cold tea.
A Long Island iced tea.
On Tremor Beach.
On a tropical island.
If she doesn't start her pension soon.
When I retire early.
early.
Are your retirement plans realistic? Financialbroker.ie is the go-to for professional advice on pensions, investments and everything in between. According to recent research, those who seek advice are almost twice as likely to save for retirement. Find your local broker today or use our pensions calculator at financialbroker.ie.
At Life Pharmacy, our focus continues to be your family's health, immunity and well-being. As the months get colder, managing our health gets more important, and we remain open to meet all your healthcare needs, providing expert advice on vitamins, supplements and everything you need to protect your family and help build immunity. Find your local Life Pharmacy on lifepharmacy.ie and discover a team that's always here to support you. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
At Irish Life Health, our benefit plan helps you embrace a healthier lifestyle. Get up to €250 back on a mix of benefits like fitness wearables, dietitians and sports clubs like your local GAA club. It's health insurance, but not as you know it. Search Irish Life Health. Irish Life Health VAC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Terms and conditions apply. Call us to see exactly what's covered.
Looking to upgrade your van or pickup? The Ford Upgrade and Save promotion can help you do just that. Save up to €6,500 and future-proof your business. There's the eco-driven Ford Transit and Transit Custom, with mild hybrid and plug-in hybrid powertrains, and the 2020 International Pickup of the Year Ford Ranger. All tough, all reliable, all capable. All yours for less. Search Upgrade and Save or text Ford to 50015 and we'll arrange a call with your local Ford dealer. Texts cost a standard rate. Vehicles must be ordered by December 31st and registered by February 28th. Terms and conditions apply. See Ford.ie for full details.
Tomorrow from 12.
Tell the DJ, turn up the sound.
Tracy Cooper's bringing you the pump.
Headliners.
And